Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Good morning, I'm Richard Ady. This is Life Matters. It's our Friday talkback.
You'll never see a dark cloud hanging round me. Now there is only blue sky to surround me. There's never been a grey day since you found me. Everything I touch is turning to gold.
Yes, the fabulous Petula Clark with the perfectly crafted pop of Colour My World. Colour is what we're talking about today. What's your favourite colour? Big question when you're a kid, but how often do you think about colour now? It's having an effect on you when you buy something or whether you eat in a certain restaurant, whether you know it or not. There's also a lot of symbolism bound up in colour. As the father of a nearly five-year-old girl, it's much easier to buy pink clothes than any other, and that's not because she makes a fuss, it's what's out there. But it's not just that, there's still a bit of the blue for boys thing going on, and certainly culturally purple, arguably that richest hue, is linked to royalty. Today we want to hear from you. Do you get happy around yellow or grey around grey? And you think of a time when colour has changed your day. Have you had your colours done? If you have, you'll know what I mean. Or perhaps you've had a confrontation with the colour card while renovating. The number to call is 1300 22 55 76. That's 1300 22 55 76. If you're in the Northern Territory or South Australia, get on the line right away to beat the time difference. WA listeners, please call the listener line on 02 833 1430. The other thing you can do wherever you are is jump onto the guestbook abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. Joining me today are three colourful guests: Peter Travis, artist and designer who's taught colour for 40 years, Diane Smith, associate professor from the School of Design at Queensland University of Technology, and personal colourist Amelia Butler. Welcome all of you to Life Matters.
Morning.
Good morning, Richard.
Okay, I'm going to put everyone in the picture. What colours are you wearing, Diane?
Oh, well, I have a black dress on, stockings and boots, and an orange top.
Okay, I'll try and keep that in my mind. And you, Peter?
Well, of course I'm wearing the royal purple.
The royal purple, you are.
This is my wet weather.
The wet weather colours. And Amelia?
I'm wearing green, bright, clear green.
And I'm wearing a white shirt with a hint of green. We'll come back to how and why we wear particular colours a bit later on. Let's kick off with you, Peter. Why does colour matter?
Well, that's an interesting question. It matters because it pervades everything. It's just everywhere. And it does have a psychological effect on everyone.
Mm.
But the interesting thing about it is it doesn't exist.
It's a construct.
Well, let's say that if the sun projected white light, the whole world would be full of white. But it doesn't. It just produces rays. And these energy rays tickle the little components at the back of your retina, and they send a message to your brain. And the brain interprets that as colour. So the wonderful thing is we touch it, we see it, but it isn't there.
It's not there. Diane, you've been doing some research into how much colour matters in the space around us.
Yes, yes. My background's architecture and interior design, and that's where my interest lies in the impact of colour on space and how people then relate to it relative to the space.
And how much does it matter to us?
It matters a lot, but probably not in the way that people would be aware of it, because we perceive our environment and we tend to take it for granted. The way we actually perceive it is related to the colours and, in particular, the colour contrast. So we might be looking at particular ranges of colours, but it's also the combinations, juxtapositions that are very important in terms of the way that the space moves and therefore how it affects the way that we feel or we read it, as in terms of what it symbolically means to us or communicate.
So if a designer, can a colour scheme of, say, an office space make us more productive?
Yes, I would say so, because of the fact that it's to do with the way that we're stimulated. So it's distraction, the type of tasks we're doing. Some of the tasks we do require us to be able to concentrate. Others, where it's social, it supports what we're doing in terms of an outward activity.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in terms of where, if you're in a very closed environment, if it's very understimulating, then there's that element of it maybe being monotonous, boring. It's a little bit of an irritant, as opposed to if it's overstimulated as well, in terms of over-coloured, over-complicated.
Right. Peter, you were asked to design the colours for one of our biggest office spaces, Parliament House.
Mm.
Yes, well, the interesting thing was that the Senate had to be red,
yep,
and the House of Representatives green. Now, with my background, I decided that, and also I should say that there was no particular red that had been certified as the right sort of red. So I started with what I thought would be the best colour to live in. Now, the design for the new Parliament House had a tremendous wide carpet of red, and that would have reflected on the white walls, which were made of stucca lustra, which is a ground marble put into the plaster, and it's very reflective. So it meant that everything would look pinkish.
Right.
Now, that wasn't too bad, however, because red is the only colour that is very strong in its pure form, but as soon as you put white in it, it becomes pink. It really changes its character. And it so happens that red is extraordinarily stimulating, but pink is very soothing. So I set out to find a red that had enough pink in it to come to a threshold where it would have the psychological effect of pink, but it would be recognised as a red.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really by adding green into the colour. Now, there were a series of pinks used, or reds, but they, as you add white to red, it gets rather sickly. And so, in the end, it ended up as a neutral. It had as much green as it had red. And after I produced this series of reds, I got on the plane and found an in-flight magazine. I tore out the page that had Uluru in the late afternoon and wrote on it, "I've given you the colours of Uluru in the late afternoon." Now, everybody thought that was wonderful. Then when I got back, I found that there was a page of my greens with a comment that said, "And you've given us the greens of the eucalypts." Now, I had no intention of doing that, but the green had to be worked in the same way as the red. And they just turned out to be very Australian.
I did not know that. I thought that it had been deliberate, that you'd gone for the Uluru and the eucalypt. But
no, not at all. But then I thought it was wonderful for it to be called Australian, because I think you're affected by the area you live in, and it was just, you know, environmentally I was probably attuned to those colours as well.
You were. Now, Diane, can I come back to you? Is there an expectation for certain places to be painted a particular shade to suit a mood, if you like?
Do you mean, Richard, in terms of what people would anticipate that something is going to be, like a hospital would be white?
Yeah, or a nursing home, you know, kind of quiet, rather serene colours, maybe? I don't know.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. Society has come to accept particular subcultural groups and anticipate that the environment would be a certain way. I think your comment about the aged care facilities is very true. There's a tendency for, our society to expect that the elderly would like their environment to be a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain physiological things, aspects that we need to take into account, which is the ageing eye, and so that the way that the colours are perceived will change. But over and above that, I think there's also an acceptance or a cultural determination about how a particular group of people will, what they will require from an environment. And my, I guess, worry about that is that we then tend to treat people,
yes,
who are in those environments in a particular way, rather than thinking about them as the individual within a space that may have particular tastes, needs.
So we should be trying to break out of this.
I think yes. I think we need to be cognizant of the things such as orientation, navigation, the changes in the eye, if we're talking about the aged care facilities still. But I think that we also need to be aware that environments actually are discriminating. We use the environment as a cue to the way that we understand the people around us, and colour is obviously a very important part of that. And so when we're picking textures, patterns, colours as part of the interior design, interior architecture, then we need to be aware that that is, that process is actually operating.
Can I ask you something even more kind of fundamental in a way? Does the colour of a place have an impact on your decision to move into it in the first place?
Yes, I would say definitely, because it impacts the colour. Traditionally, we tended to have design things, maybe thinking about them in terms of white, it's a drawing, whatever, and then we colour it in later.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, the volume and the spatial properties are impacted on colour. Colours move forward, back. They have a particular, in combination, which is very important rather than the individual colour, in combination, they will tend to maybe lift the space as opposed to make it feel more sombre, larger, smaller. It will reflect light differently depending on the quality of the colour combination that you're using. If the space is large or small, then that will impact as well. And quite traditionally, I think people have moved into smaller spaces and then say, well, I have to make it larger, rather than looking at the space and saying, what is the natural character of this space? How do I actually work with it? And then maybe in actual fact it's totally appropriate to put a very dark colour in it that has a little bit of life, rather than just painting something white and you end up with a very bland space.
We'll come back to more of this later, I think. We've got to let you go, Diane, because I know you're heading for the airport to go to Jakarta. What are you doing over there?
Well, I'm actually teaching colour, would you believe, and about residential design in terms of the form of dwelling to design students in Jakarta, one of the universities there.
All right, well, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much, Richard.
That's Dr. Diane Smith from the School of Design at Queensland University of Technology. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. It's our Friday talkback. We're talking about colour. Do you gravitate towards certain colours or avoid them? Is your working environment safe and cream, or does it scream loud colour? Has your marriage almost broken down over your partner wanting to paint the lounge room pistachio mousse? Give us a call on 1300 22 55 76 or drop us a line on our guestbook abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. If you can't get through, go to the listener line 02 833 1430. First caller of the day is Derek. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you're, I understand, national president of the Colour Society.
That's correct, yes.
I did not know we had a colour society.
Oh, yes, it's a very active but small society in Australia and represented in all the states except the territories. And Di Smith is a member in Queensland.
Right, I see. Now, where are you on? What's your favourite colour? Are you a...
Oh, I'm very English. I'm purple.
Right. Right. Do you have a different palette now that you live in Australia? Because the light's so different here, isn't it?
Very much so. I came to Australia in the 90s when I was in my mid-40s, and descending into the greys, the blues and the beiges as I perceived got older, came to Australia, the colourful country, and working in colour and meeting a lot of interesting people in colour here. I'm now love to wear bright clothes and, you know, good ties and bright ties. And so often when I go home to England, which I'm doing very shortly, people ask me if I've got volume controls for my shirts.
But you're happier in that?
Oh, absolutely. Colour pervades your life, and you've really got to get out there and enjoy it. And that's where the Colour Society members, it's so interesting being amongst them, because they come from different backgrounds. Di, as you've heard, is a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
We've got designers, we've got manufacturers like I was. I was manufacturing pigments, and you've got paint manufacturers, and you've got,
okay.
Colour pervades everything.
Thanks for kicking us off today, Derek.
Thank you.
Now, Graham in Bondi, you want to talk about black.
Yes, it was an interesting difference, to what you would be likely to get, because I was on a tour through Israel, and the kibbutz that I was working on for a short while took us down to Eilat on a summer's night. And on that particular night, by the shore, you could see three completely different bands of black. One was the water,
mm-hmm.
One was the mountains in the along the edge of the water, and that was like black velvet, if you know those old black velvet paintings used to be.
Uh-huh.
And the top was the black sky. And across this were these sparkling white dots of, you know, of light from the stars. And then, obviously, the one or two lights along the shoreline from houses. There weren't many of them. And the reflections into the water. So you had this, instead of a funereal colour, you had this depth of textural black, which was just astounding, and has been one of my favourite memories ever since.
It does sound rather magical, I have to say. Thank you for that, Graham.
Okay.
Squeezing one more before we keep moving. Maybe two, we'll see. Emma in Melbourne. Now, you wear different colours in different times.
That's right. I've been bipolar since I was 19, and I'm 31 now. I'm an artist by passion, a massage therapist by trade, and I study interior design. And I've noticed that...
You're very attuned to colour anyway, then, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. All of those realms involve colour quite considerably.
Mm.
But I've noticed that at most times I wear black and grey, which are certainly not depressing colours for me, but more more secure and protective. But when I go manic, probably one of the first external signs is that I wear a lot of colour, and a lot of colours together as well, and very bright colours too.
So your friends know,
yes,
you think?
Yeah. My close friends do, definitely.
Yeah.
It's probably a very good indicator that my energy levels are going up.
Right.
Yeah.
When the oranges and the pinks appear.
And the greens and the blues and the reds and everything all together, that's right.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's interesting. Thank you for that, Emma.
No problem.
On Life Matters today, we are talking about colour. Very keen to hear from you. There are a couple of free lines available at the moment, if you're quick. And the number to call is 1300 22 55 76. 1300 22 55 76. If you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, you need to get weaving to beat the time difference. If you're in WA, call us on 0283 1430. We'll try and get your comments to air a bit later. My guests are, well, we've been talking about colour and colourists and Australia's leading artist, designer and worker with colour is Peter Travis. He's with me in the studio. And also Amelia Butler, who's a personal colourist and whom I haven't really spoken to much yet. I want to bring into the discussion. What does a personal colourist do, Amelia?
Okay, well, basically what my role is to look at the person as... A colourful artwork. We don't often think of ourselves as colour until we're standing next to somebody who is a very different colour, like an African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realise, oh, we're actually different colours. Even the three of us in this room are what you would, you know, say are white-skinned people. But if we look at our colouring very carefully, we're actually different colours. And the reason that I look at a person's colouring is because what we're trying to work out is why certain colours produce positive effects on their skin tone and other colours produce negative effects. And if we look at the human being as an artwork or a beautiful work of nature, we're just discovering...
A canvas, if you like.
Yeah, a canvas that already has some colour on it. As human beings, we change our colouring all the time. We put hair colour, makeup, clothing. Some works really well and some doesn't. So if we look and understand what the particular aspects of the individual's colouring is, then we can help to give them guidance about what colours to choose, which will complement them.
What about you personally? Do you how does colour affect you? Are there colours you don't go near, for example?
Colouring, I think in my experience, colour choices come from a couple of different reasons. For instance, when I have a man come in and am doing colour analysis on him, I'll say, what's your favourite colour? And it's always blue. Always blue.
Can I just say mine is green?
That's okay. You're the odd one out.
Okay. Confirming a lot of prejudices out there, I'm sure. Go on.
Well, what's interesting is that our colour choices come from instinct, whatever that is, whether that's in our head or in our heart. The other colour choices we often find come from influences in society. So when a man says, oh, well, I love blue, well, I say, well, I wonder what you were dressed in as a young child. You were dressed in blue. And even from fashion influences, what colours are in, what colours people will choose.
I think I asked you if there are any colours you didn't like to wear.
I actually don't particularly like wearing blues.
Right.
Even if they suit me, I find that I have a predominance to be a bit flat, and I find whenever I wear my blue, or a blue colour, it exaggerates that. I prefer to wear reds because they rev me up. They make me feel better. So wake up feeling flat, put on some red.
Do people have a fear of colour? We heard from a member of the Colour Society, and he clearly doesn't. He's had a life change. Mm. But do men in particular, people like Peter aside, and we'll get to Peter, back to Peter in a moment, do have a kind of fear of colour? Or?
I think they do. When most people who come to me come and say, look, I want to find out what colours suit me, because over my life I've ended up wearing black, white, brown and grey, and I'm finding that really boring and depressing, but I'm afraid to choose colour because if I don't get it right, I will be feeling odd.
Yes.
People will comment, because I find that in Western culture, our culture, particularly in the cities, everything's grey and black and white and brown. There's very little colour, so people are afraid to stand out for the wrong reasons.
In Melbourne, it's practically compulsory to wear black, I understand.
Mm.
That's displaying my prejudices there.
Mm.
Before I ask you, Peter, actually, what part of the sort of spectrum or group of colours do I fit in? Can you tell from just sitting here?
Couldn't even guess.
Right, okay. It's that difficult. I feared as much. Peter, why do you think we fear colour?
Yes, but I think it's purely a prejudice. And don't forget, if you look back in history, there are people, men wore a tremendous amount of colour.
Mm.
Now, I see colour very differently, and I'm going to comment on the man who said there was three blacks. To me, they are not three blacks. The sky is dark blue, and I see colour in everything excepting the blackest of black. Now, that's the first thing.
Right.
Secondly,
so for you, there's only one black.
Yeah. Well, if I was in fashion and I had a series of blacks, I'd say, yeah, blacks can vary. But as far as the sky is concerned, it is never black. It's deepest blue. And the water is also blue. When one usually says colour, you mean pure colour. But everything is coloured. I mean, this grey is coloured. This has got a slight green tint to it. That's got a green tint to it. I can see colour in absolutely everything.
Touching bits of the studio I've never even looked at until now.
And the tarred road is quite often purple or blue. But it's not the darkest, it's not the purest purple. It has a purple tint. There's a certain amount of red in amongst the blue that makes the tile look purple, particularly in shadows. And if you want to see this in painting, there's no one better than Geoffrey Smart. He does it superbly. He understands the balance of colours and how everything is made up of colour. Now, just before I leave that, if you take a piece of skin and you photograph it and then put it on your computer and you enlarge it, you'll find it's full of thousands of small dots of colour. It's not just the one colour, and the eye mixes all this together.
Really?
So it's a very... it's much more complex.
It does sound more complex. Can I ask you where you stand on pink?
I think pink is the most beautiful colour. Pink used to be for boys and blue for girls.
Really?
Yes, and that was during the 1800s. Now, how it got turned around, I don't know. So when men say they don't like pink, it's pure prejudice, nothing else, because pink is such a good colour on all skins.
I've got a pink shirt, actually, which I don't
you look pretty good in it.
Oh, well, if I say so myself.
No, but your probably wife says.
she
buy it for you?
No, I bought it. It has actually little tiny stripes of other colours in it as well, but it's pink.
Can I just add something? Men don't realise it, but women love men wearing pink.
Is that right?
Yeah, they do.
I'll just make a note of that.
Yes.
All right, we might go back to calls now. Today we are talking about colour. We very much want to hear from you on this, and time to go to Penny on the Gold Coast. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
What are your colours?
Black and white.
Black and white.
And occasionally grey, yes.
Right.
Since I started
That's very monochromatic, I have to say.
Since I started buying my own clothes in 1946,
right.
I've been doing that a long time. I just made the decision that black and white was going to be the basis of my wardrobe.
Yep.
And it has expanded that my house is black and white, my car is black and white. I always look smart in black, and I always look smart in white. Occasionally, I will put another colour with it, but not very often.
What other colour will you put with it?
A red or a blue. Never pink or green.
It's just a highlight you're after.
Yes, something like that, yes.
It's a kind... Yes, OK. And you've done this, what, for 60
years? 1946.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, yes. Don't be rude, though, Peter.
Oh, I certainly won't. But you obviously like to be dramatic. I mean, black and white is the most dramatic thing you can do. But I'm going to ask, don't you occasionally put cream with the black instead
never.
Of white?
Oh. Like
it's
cream.
So beautiful.
No.
That's
no,
a
don't
prejudice.
Like cream.
I'm sorry.
I think navy blue either.
I'm hesitant to call you an extremist, Penny, but I think you are a bit of an extremist in the palate department. But thank you, and it does sound like you're pulling it off. Alison in Sydney, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm really well. Now, you want to talk about wallpapering.
Well, I do, because it's funny, but as a child, I guess I just took colour for granted. We always had a wonderful garden, and I kind of loved the pinks with the roses and all that kind of thing. And I didn't really take too much formal interest in it, I guess, until my mother decided to re-wallpaper our house. So it was about 1972, and I was Partridge Family mad, of course. And my mother said...
Weren't we all?
Weren't we all? And she said, we can go down to the wallpaper shop and you can have whatever wallpaper you want for your room. And she kept guiding me over to beiges and golds and dull reds, and I hit on hot pink and purple gigantic flowers. And I can tell you, my room was the hit of the neighbourhood. All the little girls in the area wanted a room like mine. So, and that really did turn me on to colour and decorating, and I still really like purple.
Right. What about, are you still wallpapering in that rather beautiful colour?
No, I'm afraid I'm probably a bit more snobby now about my colour. I think I've got a fairly sophisticated palette, and in fact, I do like all those decor magazines from overseas, so I try and be a little bit ahead of the trend with colour.
I see. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for that story. Lovely to be reminded of the Partridge Family. Sarah in Sydney. Now, you're an artist, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So how does that affect your whole, I suppose, sense of colour?
Well, I just simply love colour. I'm absolutely passionate about it.
Mm.
And what that means is that I believe and I teach my students that there is a sensitivity to colour and there is an energy of colour that you can pick up and be involved with. So if you don't believe me, try putting your finger up to the light and see how the light comes through the finger. And then if you relate that back to colour and remember that colour is fractions of the white light,
mm-hmm.
then you'll realise that colour actually goes right through your body. So of course it has an impact on you. And the sensitivity to colour is something which can be developed. Anyone can do it, they have to develop it.
Okay, you just have to find it inside.
That's what I wanted to share with people, was that you don't have to be excluded from colour. You don't have to be nervous about using it or finding out what your own colour is. You can actually learn.
All right. Thank you for that. I might try and take one more, actually. Kathy in Sydney. Now, you've been influenced by a trip overseas.
Oh, yes. I love colour. I love very bright colours, or at least I did.
Yep.
This was in the 1980s, and it was my first trip to Tokyo. And I was going there to interview a lot of fashion designers. And I went there in my beautiful bright yellow jacket. And when I got to Tokyo, everybody was in black, or maybe black and white. And it had such a powerful effect on me that I ended up just chucking away my yellow jacket and buying a black one there. And then for the next 15 or so more years, I stuck to black and white. I'm now kind of moving out of it a little bit, but I found that it was a very interesting experience seeing everybody in black and white in Japan.
Did you just not want to stand out?
No, it was... I don't... Possibly, that might have been part of it.
Yeah.
But I could see the beauty in it.
Right, okay.
I felt that without any colour there to distract me, I could actually concentrate on the silhouette and the texture of the cloth, and that black and white became colour in itself.
All right, okay. So we've had several... Thank you very much for that,
okay.
Kathy. We've had several calls from people... especially singing the praises of black and white, but especially black. Black's come through several times, and I will go to both my guests, Amelia Butler, who's a personal colourist, and is wearing some black, I have to tell you, with the green, and also Peter Travis, artist and designer and colour man extraordinaire. Sharon in Melbourne, though, you live in an unusual... Well, in a red house, I understand.
I do.
That's not red brick, is it? Is it red brick?
Well,
or?
No, it is, but all the architraves and all the windows and everything are fire engine red, and I had a long discussion with the painter about it. I really had to be very firm about making sure that it was the right colour red. He thought it would be dreadful.
Yes.
but he liked it at the end, but it really affects everything in the house. It's very Chinese red, and all of the big cupboards, everything that you go through is red. And I sort of find that colour has had waves through my life. So I've had a very long green period.
Yes.
And now I'm having a very long red period, including getting married for the second time in a red dress and married the first time in a green dress. So it really has affected how I feel, my mood, and it, I think it affects all the people around us.
How long have you had this red period for?
Well, it's been going for about 2 years.
Right, okay.
I suspect it will go for about another 8. It seems to go in 10-year cycles.
10-year cycles.
But I just, it makes me feel really good, and it makes me feel really happy, and I love our house. You know, my neighbours sort of thought the fire engine house had moved in, or the brothel, I think is the other special term that you put to red houses.
Do you share your house with other people?
Yeah, absolutely. Our friends, we have a big table where 18 people can sit, and we ended up having our wedding there, and everybody loved it. They loved that we painted all the windows red, and that it was almost like a fairy tale.
Yes.
So, and, you know, we enjoy it. You know, shades of reds and oranges and yellows.
It's a colour of heightened emotional response, I'm thinking red.
Yes, well, I'm a redhead and I'm quite passionate about it.
Okay.
But, you know,
perhaps we should.
That's not why we went there.
No, I was going to say, it's a family show, so perhaps yes, we won't go much further with that, Sharon.
No, it's more about how you embrace life, and I think you live it to the fullest, and I really, my children think it's great to live in all that colour. They really enjoy it, and our friends like visiting because of it, I think.
Okay. It does sound like quite an experience to come round to your house for tea. Thank you very much for that, Sharon. And this is Life Matters. It's Friday Talkback. We are talking about colour. Different kind of talkback, I think, this week, but different calls too. Very interesting. And my guests are Peter Travis, Australia's colourist extraordinaire, I think, and also Amelia Butler, who's a personal colourist. A lot of callers talking about black.
Mm.
I think it's... Is it me, or could one say that if you have a black wardrobe, you kind of don't have to think about it?
Possibly, but will you? That's the interesting thing. If you have black and you only have black, then you don't have to think about it. But black doesn't look as good on everybody.
No.
Some people find when they wear black, particularly women, they have to pack on the makeup because they know it makes them look pale and ghoulish. And I would ask, well, why? Why is that? And there is a reason for that. It's not having a positive effect. So sure, it might be easy for them, but they might not look as good as they want.
How much difference can it make to someone if you get it right?
Look, put it this way. I've had people who, when they've been analysed, have for the first time seen themselves as a beautiful human being, and they burst into tears. I've had people burst into tears just for a moment, but that's what's extraordinary, because they have never had the opportunity to actually see themselves as beautiful.
So they've been wearing the wrong colours all their lives.
Yeah,
and that's not realising right. What it's doing.
Another interesting thing is I had another person come in, and their school uniform for their entire school career actually turned out to be one of the colours that looked the most hideous on them. It made them look very pale, very
weak.
Sorry,
I shouldn't laugh.
Did you have a similar experience?
No, I just can't think of a school uniform that I've ever been in that anyone looked good in. But,
the colour is what didn't suit her. And what's interesting, if you spend every day of your life with people saying to you, oh, gee, you don't look well today, or is there something okay, even if you feel okay, you start to question.
Yeah.
And people treated her as if she was...
Crook.
Whereas if you wear a colour that actually makes you look really healthy and alive, and people say to you, gee, you look good today, what have you been doing? You start to feel better.
Yeah, I bet you do. Well, Peter, you say creating colour relationships is like writing poetry.
Well, yes, it is. The point is colour. There are a few loose ends I'd like to tie up very quickly.
I'm not surprised to hear it.
One, I think that black has been forced upon us because of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. Secondly,
all the fashion editors wear black.
Oh, yes, because it focuses on your face. That's the point. Your clothes don't override your personality.
Right.
And that's a very important part of black.
There's a slight quizzical look from our personal colourist there.
Now, that's the first thing. As far as one of the most beautifully dressed women I've seen recently had black stockings, black shoes, a beautiful brown skirt, a clerical grey, that is a sort of darkish grey, but and a black jacket. It happened to be our governor.
Oh, right.
And
Marie Bashir.
Yes. And it was just perfect. But not only that.
She is always very soignée, I think.
It was perfect in its selection of textures as well as the tonal values. Now, to get back to your question, because almost everything. Oh, a school uniform. I really like Sydney Boys High, the sort of chocolate brown blazers with the blue braid.
Yes.
It's really very lovely. It's very nice. And the same with the stripe. Anyway, the point is that why is colour like poetry? Well, colour should never be looked at singly. It should be looked at with in a context of other colours, because that's the way we always see it. And it should have a sort of grammar. Now, prose and poetry, you know what the verb is going to do. It tells you something about the other colours, the other words. Now, each colour tells you something about the other colours that's with them because they affect each other. So to just select an isolated colour and say, I'd like to have this, you put a red, well, to refer back to the lady with the red house.
The red house.
Now, she did say fire engine red, and then I thought, oh, God, that'd be terrible inside. But when she said Chinese red, which has green and black in it, it's subdued. It's quite a beautiful red, and that's very different.
And she also mentioned other colours inside the home as well, like oranges as well.
Yes, orange, but it depends on what orange.
It does.
And it depends on what yellow. Now, if she had a yellow that was darkened so it looked like gold, it would be very good with the Chinese red. So it's the degree of colour and how it relates to the next colour. So if you have them together so they make sense, you may have prose, but better still, you may have poetry.
Well, that's it. And I was going to ask you about colours in the home, because it obviously depends on the relationship that you have to the room, what you're using the room for, doesn't it?
Well, I really hated what was called Nile green and cream, because as a boy, the whole of Australia was those two colours.
Was it?
Everything, just everywhere. And then, so I would never have cream. But I walked into a unit about 6 years ago, and the whole place was this creamish colour, and it looked so, it was filled with sunlight. And then I realised that the black furniture or the brown furniture looked much better against the cream than it did against the white, because the contrast between the two was not so great.
Mm.
And it also helped to bring out some of the differences in the colour, whereas black is just too strong. And the point is that black will, because it's a lack of reflection of light, whatever it's alongside of, it will just demand attention. And where you have the strongest contrast, that's where your eye will be directed. So it applies when you have a black person dressed in a black garment, you really only look at their face. And so that's the reason why it's very good. Also, people forget that brown does the same sort of thing if it's a lovely deep brown. And it's a far more interesting colour.
On Life Matters, we are talking colour, and I'd now like to welcome Associate Professor in Psychology from Southern Cross University, Rick van der Zwaan, to the show. Hello, Rick.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm really well. What colours are you wearing today, Rick?
I've got on a kind of, I've got blue jeans on and a black and green jumper.
Okay. That sounds like an academic combination.
Look, and I've got my half spectacles halfway down my nose, so I'm looking very academic today.
What can you say about how we respond to colour? Because there's several ways in which we do, surely.
Yes, for sure. And the colour's a really, really interesting thing from a psychological perspective, because in evolutionary terms, it's been very, very important for us. So the evolution of colour perception was a big step forward for creatures in their ability to find food that's useful to them, and also to avoid predators. So for a long time, in a behavioural sense, colour's been really, really important.
You'd think then that how we deal with colour, how we process colour, that would be, a very probably take up quite a bit of processing power.
Well, it sure does. We've got these very, very complicated structures called our eyes, which are used to pull different wavelengths of light out of the environment, and then to combine them so that we can separate objects from each other and recognise things that are going to be useful to us from things that are dangerous to us. And we see that those responses to two colours in the associations that typically in nature were useful to us or something that we had to worry about.
So do we get a physiological response to certain colours?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's some really, really interesting ones. So, for example, reds and yellows are in nature very, very often warning colours. And
yes.
You see an increased physiological response to that. So, for example, in yellow rooms, people fight more. Babies cry more in yellow rooms, so it's not a great colour necessarily
Why is that? Because of the heightened arousal that yellow brings about.
That's right. Yellow is a colour in nature that very, very often signals a danger.
Yep.
So you know, look out for me, and the same with red. And so it elicits it gets us ready to flight or flee. It gets our flight fight response going, and so we begin to attend, and that makes our metabolism go up as well. So we increase our metabolic rate. So we get more ready to respond. We're quicker on the trigger in a yellow environment.
Don't paint your kitchen yellow.
Don't paint your kitchen yellow unless you want to get rid of your partner.
I know someone who's done that. What about culturally? We have touched on this, but there are cultural associations, aren't there? Different colours.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's very, very interesting to compare cultures and also to look within a culture across time. So, for example, in Western societies, the contemporary thing, I guess, is for brides often to wear white to signal purity.
Yep.
Or to represent purity. But that's a fairly recent cultural change. Traditionally, in the Middle Ages and just after, brides used to wear green, and they'd wear green to signal their fecundity, that they were ready to produce offspring, and that they were healthy and vibrant.
Actually, just while we're on that, I want to bring in Amelia. Would you ever suggest to someone not to wear white at a wedding because it didn't suit them?
There's many different versions of white, and that's what we're looking at.
What a diplomatic answer that is.
There's many different... It's not the colour, it's the version of the colour. So you've got cream, you've got pure
ivory.
White, you've got ivory. There's hundreds
okay.
of different...
There's always a way through, is that what you're saying?
Always a way through.
All right. Well, Rick, just before we go to calls, and then we'll come back to you and the rest of them, I guess, what about marketing? Because it occurs to me that if we're getting these physiological responses and deep cultural relationships with colour... The marketing people will be onto this.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And that's why so very often you see things that people want to draw attention to painted in red or yellow, because it does capture your attention. It does make you attend to that thing more. So one of the interesting tricks that's happening on the web now is if you're looking through websites where you can buy things or select things, then very often the button or the thing that you have to click on to put that in your shopping trolley, so to speak, will be a red button.
Right.
Because it will capture your attention. It's the thing that draws your eye. And increasingly now we're seeing marketing get very, very sophisticated. So they're looking at combinations of colours, and they're not just looking at what people say. They're actually measuring their brain waves to see how they're responding at an unconscious level, to see whether the responses are emotional, whether they're positively emotional or negatively emotional. And they're tweaking the colour combinations to make sure that they get exactly the right response from you.
And they'll defend these colours too. I mean, I'm thinking of a particular chocolate company that is associated with a very rich colour, and I think one of the supermarkets started using a very similar colour in its branding of its own brand chocolate, and there was a tremendous kerfuffle over this.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, once you have a very good product that's associated with a colour or a colour combination, then that colour combination has market value, because it triggers in the consumer a response to the product, not to the colours, but to the product.
Mm. Well, let's take some more calls now, and then we have to start to wrap this up. It's gone awfully fast, I think. Pauline in the ACT, you see intangible things in colours.
Yes.
Are we talking about halos? What are we talking about?
No, unfortunately I don't see auras and things like that, but things like pain are in colours. I think my GP thinks I'm slightly weird when she says, what's the pain like? And I say, well, it's sort of a rusty purple colour, or it's yellow, or something like that. And days of the week, and I get up, and like today, my day is pale green.
Right, okay.
Some strange reason.
It sounds like you've almost got a version of synesthesia, which is when your senses kind of become, when you can hear colour. And
there are
people who have this.
Yes.
They're rare, and it's not well understood. Peter, you want to say something?
Yes, well, a young man wrote a book recently called I Was Born on a Blue Wednesday.
He was born on a blue day. Daniel
yes,
Tammet, we had him on the
right.
show, actually.
Yes, I heard him, and it was extraordinary because I think he was able to remember the longest line of numbers. And he did this by seeing a series of colours. And he closed his eyes, saw the range of colours, and then quoted a number for each colour.
He is Asperger's and he is a mathematical savant as well. But yes, yeah, that's interesting. Thank you for that, Pauline. I want to just keep moving. I've got a full ball. Gail in Ballina, you have an experience on an island with very few colours. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I lived on Montague Island for a year, just south of Sydney, off the coast of Narooma.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an extraordinarily beautiful place. It wasn't until a tree flowered at Christmas time that was white and red that I realised that the colours... I'd been living with sort of very grey and...
muted.
Grey-green, muted colours.
Yeah.
And even the ocean, while it's beautiful most of the time, we did have a very overcast time when we were down there, so that was often a deeper colour. I didn't realise really how deprived I had been of colour, or the joy that seeing something of a startlingly beautiful colour can bring you, until I walked out the back door one day and there was this New Zealand Christmas bush in flower, and it was just like, oh my god,
Pohutukawa, and they are beautiful.
Yes, it was just stunning, and it was one of those things I didn't realise. I was, you know, very busy with kids and, you know, living on an island and all that sort of stuff, and just to see colour, you just suddenly think, oh wow, I missed that.
Still a rare privilege to have spent some time on Montague.
Oh, it was wonderful. Best year ever.
Thank you very much for joining us with that. Now, Odin in southeast Queensland, you've got a poem on colour, is that right?
That's correct. It's called The Orchestra of Colour, and it was written because of just how beautiful the colours are here in Australia.
Go for your life.
How I love the colours that my home will often show, the desert reds and forest greens, deep water blue, you know, the colours of the butterflies and flowers you should see, and secret sacred orchids live high in native tree, the ochre of the first, a colour lost in time and fiery flash of opal still dance within my mind. The lustre of the signet pearl and tearing top-end sky with stairways to the moon are such banquets for the eyes. And tiger shadows deep down south near crystal waterways and southern lights come out at night, oh, how the colours play. With trees so old, their age not told, they're dancing throughout time. And this orchestra of colour plays a song that's yours and mine.
Well, it's not quite Dorothy McKellar, but I know what you're getting at. Thanks for that, Owen.
Thank you.
We're squeezing one more. Greg from Ballarat, you've got a question on colour and music.
Yeah, it's, there's a saying, the colour of the strings. If you play the same note on a guitar string but on different gauge strings, so they, you know, it's the same pitch but it has a different tone,
yep.
It's referred to as the colour of the strings. And I've just been reflecting, listening to the conversation. You often have that effect on me, Richard. There's a music venue in Melbourne that has the ceilings painted a beautiful nightscape blue with stars, and I've been there lots of times, and whenever the band's playing a particularly moving part, I always look up, and the colour enhances the experience.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So is there a sound? I know that you might say a colour is loud, but does it make noise, or does it affect the way we hear noise?
I think Peter will have thought about this.
Well, I can partly agree, but I also disagree. The point is that some people that have a synesthesia do see particular colours for sounds. It's actually a malfunction of the brain. However, the point is that you are having an added experience. And we did have a theatre in Sydney like that, with the blue sky and little stars dotted across it. I think that you have a sense of romance.
Yes.
And, of course, you looked up at this and felt great because it probably recalled something, maybe subconsciously.
That's reassuring, I think, Greg. Not a malfunction in the brain, but a sense of romance. Thank you very much for joining us with that. I will squeeze in one more. Claire in Melbourne. You see people's names in colour.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I think that is a form of synesthesia. What do you see when I say Richard?
Green.
Oh, well, that's right.
I see it instantly, too. It's quite unusual. I mean, I didn't know. I've felt this all my life, but didn't know anyone else. I never spoke about it until recently. I was talking to one of my relatives and said that I just mentioned that I was good with colour because I feel I have got a good blend of colours. And I said that I see names in colour. And he said, oh, yes, his daughter did too. So it's something in the genes, obviously.
It obviously is. Well, what an experience. Can you stay on the line? Because we might like to catch up with you at a later date. On Life Matters, we are starting to wrap up our talk back on colour. So I'm thinking perhaps no more calls, but use the guest book, abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters, or call us on the listener line, 02833 1430. Got a few guest book contributions here, and one is the other day I had a wonderful massage. The very perceptive therapist said at the end of the session that I should surround myself with red. I then picked up my red bag, took out my red wallet, paid her, took my car keys out to the red key holder, drove to my house, which has several red walls and features red everywhere. She had not known any of this before imparting this information, so I was somewhat blown away. And I'm totally colour... This is another one. I'm totally colourblind, so colour has a different effect on me. It's about intensity of reflected light, textures and patterns and position. And I agree it's a construct, as I think I see colours. Its non-presence affects mood. And this one, I must put this to the panel, actually. What do the colour gurus think about the Pope's red shoes? I have to ask the personal colourist Amelia Butler first. The Pope's red... He always wears red shoes, apparently.
I have to say That's the first time I've heard that. I didn't notice.
Oh, no, he does. He's always done it. And he wears red shoes.
Well, I don't think it's his choice. I think it's a matter of tradition.
No. I think he did it before he was Pope. Well, I could be completely wrong there. I hold my hand up.
Perhaps he'll give us a call and tell us why.
Rick, do you know anything about the Pope wearing red shoes?
Perhaps he thinks he's Dorothy.
Well, there are a couple of things I want to sort out before we wrap this up, and that's colour taboos. Rick, We are, I suppose, moving away from being so rigid, but you still probably wouldn't wear bright colours to a funeral, would you?
Well, it depends. Again, I mean, it depends on the culture that you're in. So, for example, I think in China, you would wear red to a funeral.
Right. Okay.
It's a funeral colour, but interestingly, you'd wear it to a wedding as well, and I think that's because it's associated with luck. So, luck in this life, luck in the next life, that sort of thing. There's some interesting things about that, though. So, for example, it's very often recommended that you wear blue to a job interview because it signals loyalty. It's probably not a good idea just to wear really... well, it depends on the job that you're going for, just to wear black.
Yes.
For the reasons that the panel have been discussing.
Unless you want a job as a fashion editor. Do you think, Rick, that we all need to be a bit more aware of how colour's influencing us, especially with the marketing thing I was talking about before?
I think so. I think that it's interesting to reflect on. It's interesting to reflect on the colours that we're wearing, and also that the people with engaging with us are wearing themselves, and the way that colours are being used in a marketing sense. There's lots of little tricks and tools that people use to try and get you on side. So, for example, you know, if you know something about your boss and you want to ask something of them,
yep.
Wear the sorts of colours that they would normally wear.
Oh, what a good idea. Now, Peter, as we wrap this up, as an artist, do you think we should all be taking more risks in using colour, or should we be leaving it to the artists like you?
No, people are going to wear what they want anyway, and they will be dictated to by fashion. Nobody would ever have imagined that boys would wear pants that looked like their brother's hand-downs when I was a little boy.
No one should wear them after 25, that's right. What I think, but
well,
anyway.
You know, when I was a small boy, I used to go to the films, and here was a cartoon called Our Gang Comedy, and there was a little boy who just wore all his brother's clothes, and he had great big wide trousers, and you would never think that had become a fashion.
Okay.
So one thing I did want to mention...
It has to be quick.
Yes, that I'm having my major exhibition in... Brisbane St John's Cathedral.
We'll put details on the website and I'll remind everyone of that at the end. And Amelia,
yes.
When can you book me in?
Any time next week?
I think it has to be done after today. Thank you to all my guests for joining me today. Amelia Butler, Peter Travis and Rick van der Zwan. Please keep the conversation going on our guest book or via email. You can do both. Find out details of Peter's exhibition too at abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters. Today's programme was produced by the very colourful Tracy Tromp, and our technical producer was Simon Branthwaite, who is happiest wearing red. I'm taking a break next week, but James Carlton will be in the chair. The Book Show is next on ABC Radio National, and today Peter Mayers is looking at books for children. I'm Richard Ady. Have a good weekend.
ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.
Their knowledge of spirituality and the way that they express their life moving forward from places of damage to places of healing is very, very rich.
Amos Lenny of the Baptist Church in Alice Springs. He's one of many staying with the stories as various churches in Central Australia build bridges between Indigenous Australians and the wider community. That's Staying with the Stories in Encounter. And you can download this program from the Radio National website.